The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's stories include Wall Street sets more records as earnings season gears up, and emergency rental relief rises slightly in September. Wall Street ticked further into record heights on Monday as a better-than-expected profit reporting season gets into higher gear. The S&P 500 rose 21.58 points, or 0.5%, to 4,566.48, and surpassed its last record set on Thursday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average also reached an all-time high after adding 64.13, or 0.2%, to 35,741.15. The NASDAQ composite picked up 136.51, or 0.9%, to 15,226.71. Tesla jumped to the biggest gain in the S&P 500 after Hertz said it will buy 100,000 Model 3 vehicles for its fleet. The landmark deal for the electric vehicle industry sent Tesla up 12.7%, and because it's one of the biggest stocks in the market, Tesla's moves have an outsized effect on the S&P 500. Stocks broadly have been pushing higher recently as companies turn in much stronger profit reports for the summer than analysts expected. With roughly 1 in 4 S&P 500 companies having reported, more are topping expectations than usual and by a wider margin, according to FactSet. S&P 500 companies so far have reported profits for the third quarter that were nearly 46% higher than year-ago levels. That has companies in the index on track to report overall growth of roughly 32.5%, according to FactSet. That compares with expectations for roughly 27% growth when the third quarter closed on September 30th. Several of the market's most influential stocks are set to report their own profits in the coming week. That includes Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, and Google's parent company, Alphabet. Because they're the four biggest companies on Wall Street by market value, their stock movements have a huge effect on the S&P 500 even more than Tesla's. Facebook, the fifth largest company in the S&P 500, gave its latest report after trading ended Monday. It's been dealing with controversy over how much it favors making profits over harming its users, but its earnings nevertheless squeaked by Wall Street's forecast, though its revenue fell short. High inflation that's been more stubborn than expected also continues to create winners and losers in the market. Stocks of energy companies were strong after the price of U.S. oil topped $85 per barrel during the morning. It's the first time that's happened in roughly 7 years, though the price sank back as the day continued. But such gains were checked by losses for Kimberly-Clark, the maker of Kleenex and Huggy diapers, and other consumer products companies that are struggling with the effects of high inflation. Kimberly-Clark cut its forecast for full-year 2021 profit because of the higher cost it's paying for energy and other goods. It's also one of many companies dealing with snarled supply chains around the world as economies bounce back from the pandemic shutdown. Its stock fell 2.2%. High inflation has stuck around, even though many economists and investors had earlier said they expected only a transitory bout. Fed Chair Jerome Powell said on Friday that inflation is likely to stay elevated well into next year amid gummed-up supply chains and shortages. That could put pressure on the central bank to halt the record-low interest rates that it's been providing to support markets and the economy. The central bank is preparing to soon slow its monthly bond purchases meant to keep longer-term interest rates low, but a move on short-term interest rates doesn't appear imminent. The yield on the 10-year Treasury fell to 1.63% from 1.65% late Friday. Historically low interest rates, along with strong corporate profit growth, have helped the S&P 500 more than double from the bottom it set in March 2020 in the early days of the pandemic. The pandemic still remains, of course. A resurgence of infections during the summer helped to slow the economy's growth, and some on Wall Street worry about how big a hit corporate profits will ultimately take because of it. Moderna rose 7% after it reported encouraging data on use of its COVID-19 vaccine in children. European and Asian stock markets ended mixed. Next, emergency rental relief rises slightly in September. The amount of emergency rental assistance reaching tenants and landlords grew slightly from August to September, but the Biden administration and state and local programs continue to struggle getting money out the door, especially in the absence of renter protections from a federal eviction moratorium. Last month, nearly $2.8 billion was spent on rent, utilities, and missed payments, and some 510,000 households were reached, according to figures released Monday by the Treasury Department. By comparison, $2.3 billion was spent in August, reaching 459,000 households. All told, Congress appropriated $46.5 billion for emergency rental aid between two aid packages. Of the $25 billion appropriated in December, roughly $10.3 billion has gone out the door. A March relief package provided the other $21.5 billion. Almost $367 million of that bucket has been spent through September, according to the Treasury. The top-line figures have ticked up each month, but there has not been the marked ramping up of spending that officials at the White House and Treasury had hoped for. An eviction moratorium put in place by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention last year was intended to keep people in their homes during a public health crisis and economic recession. The Biden administration hastily enacted a final moratorium in August, in part to give programs more time to get aid out the door. But when the Supreme Court struck down that ban a few weeks later, housing advocates and government officials feared a flood of evictions that could swell to a national homelessness crisis. Yet that grim nightmare has not materialized, and experts are conflicted over reasons. It's possible some courts are still severely backlogged. In some areas, the eviction moratorium did little to slow filings anyway. Some tenants may have moved on their own to avoid eviction. Administration officials credit emergency rental assistance and say the aid can go further if programs aren't inundated with a crush of applications all at once. There's no question that the 2 million payments so far and the path to 3.5 million payments in 2021 is making a meaningful difference in preventing the feared surge in evictions. But it is still not good enough, said Gene Sperling, who is leading the rollout of the American Rescue Plan at the White House. September data showed some bright spots. Los Angeles more than doubled its disbursements from $32 million in August to $72 million in September. The state of Illinois jumped to $177 million in September from $62 million in August, an increase of 185%. But even those figures don't change persistent frustrations that state and local programs aren't easing their application rules or show little interest in improving their systems at all. By law, the Rental Assistance Program directs Treasury to start reallocating excess first-round funds, which would allow them to move money from lower-performing programs to those that are leading the pack. For example, that process will soon be underway. Next, household paper product manufacturer says inflation to raise prices. Prices of toilet paper, diapers, facial tissues, and paper towels will likely rise in coming weeks as consumer giant Kimberly-Clark warned Monday that inflation and supply chain concerns aren't likely to be resolved quickly. The maker of household items such as Huggies diapers, Kleenex facial tissues, and Scott paper towels also cut its annual forecast for the third consecutive quarter. Adjusted earnings will be $6.05 to $6.25 a share this year, the company said, down from a prior projection of as much as $6.90. CEO Michael Suess said the company is facing a volatile and difficult macro environment. Our earnings were negatively impacted by significant inflation and supply chain disruptions that increased our cost beyond what we anticipated, he said in a statement as the company reported earnings for the July through September period. We are taking further action, including additional pricing and enhanced cost management, to mitigate these headwinds as it's becoming clear that they are not likely to be resolved quickly. Suess price hike warning comes despite double-digit growth in quarterly sales for several of Kimberly-Clark's personal care products and improving performance in its tissue and professional supplies business. Quarterly sales totaled $5 billion, up 7% from the same period a year ago. In North America, Kimberly-Clark reported a 3% sales increase in consumer goods and 16% increase in professional products. Outside North America, sales were up 6% in developing and emerging countries and were even with year ago in developed markets. But its operating profit slid by just over 1% to $657 million, including charges related to a 2018 restructuring. Kimberly-Clark said its cost rose by $480 million on higher pulp, polymer, distribution, and energy expenses. Diana Gomes, a Bloomberg intelligence analyst who tracks the company, said she doesn't expect Kimberly-Clark's earnings to realize price hike benefits until 2022, forcing the company to sacrifice profit in order to advertise its products. Ads are needed as it passes additional premium product price hikes to customers to counter input cost $1.4 billion to $1.5 billion above 2020's amid pulp, transportation, and energy input inflation, Gomes wrote on Monday. Kimberly-Clark's emerging market expansion beyond premium diaper sales in China might not be enough to prevent an expected 1% to 2% sales decline this year, after a 6% boost in 2020, Gomes said. Sales spikes in tissues and toilet paper during COVID-19 are decelerating faster than expected, so a rebound in the professional hygiene segment is critical as vaccinated workers return to offices and other public spaces, she said. Kimberly-Clark's 14% market share makes it the number two maker of personal hygiene products globally, behind rival Procter & Gamble, according to Passport data from Euromonitor International. Next, is that EV really worth it? Study compares electric vehicle charge cost versus gas, and the results were surprising. Last year, Patrick Anderson went electric. He got a Porsche Taycan EV in dark blue. Anderson, who is CEO of East Lansing, Michigan-based economic consulting firm Anderson Economic Group, loves the zippy acceleration and exciting features the car offers. He also gets satisfaction in knowing that he's driving an EV that benefits the environment, he said. But Anderson's joy comes with a dark side. They are a wonderful driving experience, but at the same time, they're an enormous burden in time and in energy in finding chargers and getting them charged, Anderson said. And you're not really saving much in terms of charging cost. You may be paying more. Costs to drive an EV compared with a gasoline car are detailed in a report Anderson Economic released Thursday called Comparison, Real-World Cost of Fueling EVs in ICE Vehicles. The study has four major findings. There are four additional costs to powering EVs beyond electricity: cost of a home charger, commercial charging, the EV tax, and deadhead miles. For now, EVs cost more to power than gasoline costs to fuel an internal combustion car that gets reasonable gas mileage. Charging costs vary more widely than gasoline prices. There are significant time costs to finding reliable public chargers. Even then, a charger could take 30 minutes to go from 20% to an 80% charge. It is the first of a series of reports Anderson Economic Group will release. It started the project, an independent report, more than 6 months ago. Anderson has worked with the auto industry for 20 years, and given the industry's transition to EVs, the group decided to do the studies to assess the likelihood consumers will adopt the cars. General Motors and Ford Motor Company are banking on such a switch. Both are investing tens of billions of dollars to go all electric in the next two decades. GM has promised to double its revenues largely on the backs of new EVs. Part of the strength of the analysis is we're showing the real-world costs that EV drivers face, Anderson said. You typically have to go to a commercial charger, and commercial charger rates are 2 to 3 to 4 times that of residential charger rates. Then there is the time to drive around to find a commercial charger, time that Anderson dubs deadhead miles. Even charging at home on a level 1 or level 2 charger is time-consuming and expensive. The study found that the average cost to install a level 1 charger is $600. To install a level 2 costs $1,600 because it requires hiring an electrician. An L1 charger uses a 110-volt supply of electricity and can take 20 or more hours to charge, whereas a L2 charger uses 240 volts and can charge in a few hours. I have a picture of my home charging going on 90 hours. 90 hours and the car is still not charged, Anderson said. Ford charges $800 for an L2 charger, but they put right on there, if you put that in the wall at 110 volts, it would take 93 hours to charge. A lot of people are surprised by how much time it takes to charge a vehicle. Anderson's report considers four costs beyond the cost of residential electricity when calculating how much it costs to drive an EV. Cost of the residential charger, cost of commercial electricity, an annual EV tax, which in Michigan ranges from $135 to $235, depending on the vehicle model. This is to make up for not paying a gas tax. Deadhead miles to get to a fast charger. Given all of that, the conclusion is EVs cost more to fuel than gasoline cars that get reasonable gas mileage, Anderson said. A mid-priced internal combustion car that gets 33 miles per gallon would cost $8.58 in overall cost to drive 100 miles at $2.81 a gallon, the study found. But a mid-priced EV, such as a Chevrolet Bolt, Nissan Leaf, or a Tesla Model 3, would cost $12.95 to drive 100 miles in terms of costs that include recharging the vehicle using mostly a commercial charger. On a yearly basis, assuming the mid-priced car traveled 12,000 miles, it would cost $1,030 to drive an internal combustion car and $1,554 to drive an EV. For luxury cars that get 26 miles per gallon and using premium gas at $3.25 a gallon, the cost to drive an internal combustion car 100 miles is $12.60. The cost to drive a luxury EV, such as a Taycan, Tesla, Model S or X, or Jaguar I-Pace, is $15.52 to travel 100 miles. That is using mostly commercial chargers. That's apples to apples and includes the extra EV taxes, the commercial charging and the home charging, and the allowance of driving to a gas station, which for most Americans is very short compared to driving to a commercial charger for an EV owner, Anderson said. The study differs from some reports that show it's cheaper to drive an EV than a conventional car. For example, a 2018 study from the University of Michigan's Transportation Research Institute found the average cost to operate an EV in the U.S. was $485 per year, compared with a gasoline-powered vehicle at $1,117. Anderson said most studies include only the cost of residential electricity and don't factor in the four other costs that the study does. Still, he noted, there are environmental benefits to EV ownership, and cost would come down if there are more reliable commercial charging centers built. Electric cars also require less costly maintenance than gasoline-powered vehicles. Our research is consistent with what President Biden and the Detroit Three have said, which is a choke point for a number of consumers is the lack of infrastructure, Anderson said. My own experience with an EV is that the biggest challenge is getting them charged, so that it's something that you can use on a daily basis. Charging costs vary much more for EVs than gasoline prices, too, by 100% or more from month to month or week to week, Anderson said. If you drive to the most expensive gas station, your varying price won't be as great as that, he said. The rates for commercial charges around Michigan range from 31 cents a kilowatt to 66 cents a kilowatt. The Michigan resident price is 17 cents a kilowatt. That's going to be a big surprise to a lot of drivers, Anderson said, adding that many commercial chargers will also require the EV driver to enroll and sometimes pay a $20 fee, but that might be reimbursed with charging. Also, don't plan on ever having a 100% charge on your EV, he said. It's very difficult to charge it up to 100%, Anderson said. the Chargers slow down and the manufacturers warn you not to do it because there is additional burden on the battery system when you get your vehicle above a 90% charge. That means if the vehicle advertises a range of 240 miles on a full charge, a driver in reality will get considerably less on, say, 80% charge, he said. That means a trip up north could require a few stops at charging stations that can provide an 80% charge in 30 minutes. For new EV drivers, these costs, time constraints, and other considerations are often a surprise, Anderson said. Unlike their reliable gas cars that have 300 or 400 miles of range that can be filled up at a number of gas stations in our country, you have to think about what available chargers you have and plan it out, Anderson said. It's more than range anxiety. It's a burden of constantly monitoring the charging status. The Anderson Report lists about two dozen sources in its research, which relied on consumer experiences and cost for drivers that go beyond government data on fuel economy and electricity prices. Anderson said it did stopwatch measurements of the time required to refuel gasoline cars and EVs, recorded customer experiences on reliability of chargers, charging time and cost. It used consumer reports from actual EV drivers, including those posted on forums for Taycan and Tesla drivers, Reddit, and applications serving EV drivers, such as PlugShare and ChargePoint. Next, unvaxxed pilots costing millions, United tells judge. United Airlines said it's spending about $1.4 million every 2 weeks to put unvaccinated pilots on paid leave because their colleagues refuse to risk their safety by flying with them. The airline disclosed the figure in a filing Friday night in a federal court in Fort Worth, Texas. United is asking U.S. District Judge Mark Pittman not to extend a temporary restraining order he imposed earlier this month on the vaccine mandate the airline announced for all U.S. employees in August. Pittman's order, which means United can't place unvaccinated workers with a religious or medical objection to its mandate on unpaid leave, is causing irreparable financial harm and should not be extended, United said. The plaintiffs want the mandate blocked for the duration of the court fight. United argues it will never recoup the money it's spending, even if it wins the case, while the pilots would get money damages and retroactive seniority if they ultimately prevail on the merits. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.